Hello and welcome to the Tennis Menu's Daily Roland Garros Show. I'm your host, Val Febbo, and boy, do we have a big show today for thetennismenu.com. Go and get an annual subscription for just $99.90 US, which includes over 600 tennis-specific drills and resources to make you a better tennis coach. It was a big night of tennis last night with some key stakeholders in Roland Garros making their play for the title, with Novak Djokovic continuing his rich vein of form and going through to the quarterfinals, still yet to drop a set. Stefanos Tsitsipas also doing the same to Grigor Dimitrov. We'll chat a little bit about that match. A rain-interrupted day as well, but Andrei Rublev was able to get through an epic. We'll touch on that match and how he was able to overcome his opponent. And also on the women's side of things, we had one match that wasn't played between Ons Jabeur and Danielle Collins due to the rain at Paris. But Petra Kvitova in an emotional win over Zhang Shuai and Sofia Kenin. We'll touch on what happened with her match and the bizarre occurrence that happened during it that completely turned the match on its head against Fiona Ferro. And the man that we're going to chat about that with is Mark Sofoulis, the best high-performance coach in the business. Mark, the viewers won't see it or the listeners won't hear it, but it's taken me about five cracks to get this intro right, but I finally got to you. How are you?
I'm going well, Val. And what an amazing night and circumstances at the Sofia Kenin match. I thought that was one of the most bizarre circumstances I've ever seen at a Grand Slam, where her father went and sat next to the coach of Ferro and basically turned the whole match around. And we'll touch on that a little bit as we go along. But, yeah, incredible. I was up from 2 a.m. My lower back problems again playing up, but it actually got me up to watch some tennis, which was really good. And, yeah, I've had a great night watching some amazing tennis. And Stefanos Tsitsipas was amazing last night. We'll touch on that as we go along. But, really good performance by him.
If it's any consolation, I was sound asleep. So that might help you. I don't know. Joel, and I'm sure Joel was sound asleep. We sent a good night text to each other last night as well. So, Joel, how are you? And good morning. And have you done your homework today?
Yeah, I have, boys. Good morning. Dzień dobry. That's a bit of Polish. Apologies to the Polish people that are listening. I'm pretty sure I slaughtered that. But, a bit of Polish for my girl, Iga, this morning. She's doing very well. So I thought I'd bring that one out.
Look at that. I don't know I'll find that why I find that so funny, because I actually knew it was coming, but I really don't know why.
Great start to the show, huh?
Yeah, fantastic. Well done, Joel. But look, as bizarre as my laughter was, I think that it was bizarre what happened in the Sofia Kenin match last night against Fiona Ferro. We'll start with the women's side of the draw, and look, Mark, she got pants in the first set by Fiona Ferro 6-2, but then came back to win 6-2, 6-1 in the next two sets. So you mentioned off air that there was a really, really weird occurrence in that match where it involved Sofia Kenin's dad changing his seat. So talk us through exactly what happened and why it changed the match.
Very interesting, right? Watching the match, I was sitting there watching Ferro and thinking, wow, this girl is absolutely pantsing her. She's playing a phenomenal brand of tennis, aggressive, big forehand, using the drop shot when she needed to. She was just unstoppable in the first set. As soon as the first set went and was gone, Sofia Kenin's dad walked over to the other side of the court and sat in the seat right next to Ferro's coach. Now, bizarre. I have no idea what was going on, whether Ferro's coach was coaching during the match and he wasn't like, Kenin's dad wasn't liking it, or he just felt like changing seats and ruffling feathers. I have no idea. But from that moment on, Ferro could not put a ball on the court. Kenin played the most incredible tennis, couldn't miss, was playing super aggressive. It just changed the whole match. So Kenin, from losing the first set 6-2, won 12 out of the next 15 games. It was just a phenomenal turnaround. And to make it even worse, Kenin was 2-love up in the first set. So Ferro won 6 games in a row. Then the seat change happened, and that was it. It was just one of the most bizarre circumstances. And I know from being a coach in a massive moment in a match, and my players asked me to change seats because it was bad luck with the seat I was sitting in. And it's changed matches, but I'd never, ever gone and sat next to an opposition's coach, because you're not allowed to do that. You've actually got your own box seat allocated. So that was bizarre.
Well, mainly because I think there's no crowds there, so you can afford to go and do that. But whether that's actually within the rules, you don't know. But it's kind of like when when you're in a urinal and there's so much space there. And then some guy, you're there and some guy just comes straight next to you and starts doing his business. I'm one of those that can't use the urinal because of that reason. But it's exactly what it is.
Well, I'm going to say it's nothing like that, but at the same time.
It's just as uncomfortable, though.
Oh, boy.
Oh, we're off to a ripping start once again here on Tennis Menus. Daily Roland Garros show. I better take over.
All right, yeah, I better harness this. where were we? Sophia Kennan, she was crying after the match as well. She said that and came out said that she hated the clay. And look, you said before the tournament, Mark, that you didn't think she'd get this far. She's not a real clay courter, and her best result was a fourth round last year at Roland Garros. And looking at what she's done, is it kind of similar to that Yelena Ostapenko mold where the ball was kind of sitting up for her in these slower conditions, and she's got that ability with time to try and ensure that she can just club the ball wherever she wants, really?
Pretty much. I mean, the first set, she had no rhythm. Ferrer was taking control of the court, pushing her back. She couldn't attack. And then the whole match just flipped, obviously, not because of probably the seat change. It just flipped in general. And Kennan was stepping up the court. She had so much time. It just looked like everything had changed for her, like the conditions had changed. And you're right, she spoke about it after the match. She definitely does not like clay. She's never had a great success on clay, but she was able to really play some great tennis last night after that first set. And it was due to her court positioning. She stepped up the court a lot more. She was playing more aggressive and really taking time away from Ferrer. And then Ferrer couldn't do anything with the ball, and that was it. And she got her end up a little bit, got her confidence, and then it was hard to stop. So it was a great match in the end from Kennan, and she moves on. And yeah, it's a challenging one for her next, where she'll play, the winner of Jabeur and Collins, which is going to be a tough one because obviously Jabeur with her creativity and Collins with her ball speed may trouble her a little bit. So it could be a very interesting match for the next one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And unfortunately, we couldn't get that match done because of rain last night. So that'll be pushed towards tonight's matchups. But I think the stat that I really like from this match, 39 winners from Kennan, but Ferrer herself hit 21. But it seemed like it was a fairly aggressive match. And I think the one thing for Kennan, winning 54% of her second serve points, and Ferrer only won 36. And that just shows the intent right there from Sophia Kennan for what she wanted to do in this match and how she wanted to play it. She wanted to dictate Ferrer all around the court. And that's what she did after that first set. Or maybe it's what her dad did. I don't know. But it's such a bizarre way to turn a match, but it certainly did. And Kennan, she continues her stunning year where she won the Australian Open, US Open. I think it was the fourth round that she made there. So, yeah, brilliant stuff from her. But Petra Kvitova, another one going through. This is her first quarterfinal at Roland Garros, and only since 2012, and only the second time in her career she's progressed to the final eight in Paris. And getting through to the semifinals that year, losing to Maria Sharapova, and then, of course, the incident where she was she had a home invasion and was stabbed in her left. It was her left wrist, wasn't it? So, goal to see her get through to another Roland Garros quarterfinal. She's made the Australian Open final in 2019. I think a lot of us were hoping that, you know, the perfect story for her to get through and win another Grand Slam. She's still in this one, and looking at what she's been able to do, what a narrative. And how great is it to see? Because she is genuinely one of the kindest players on tour, yeah, and one of the most watchable. So to see her doing so well again at Roland Garros, it really warms your heart, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And you spoke about the 2019 final in Australia, Val, against Naomi Osaka. I remember watching that match and thinking, this is just one of those matches where you just want neither player to lose. You're kind of hoping that there's two winners somehow because... Yeah. There were two great stories in it, and we just wanted to see Petra win, I guess, so badly after what happened to her. And fortunately, we still can. Obviously, she's showing that she can still play fantastic tennis. She's shown that pretty consistently since she had that injury. and only missed, I think, one Grand Slam since that happened, which was the 2017 Australian Open, which is absolutely incredible when we think about what happened to her. And yeah, I guess it's good to see that she's taking her opportunity in Paris, because realistically, given all that we've sort of said about the courts and the balls and the conditions, they should probably suit her. She's got that really powerful game. And I think definitely from here, she's probably got to be one of the favourites, I think, to take out the title. I'm still sticking by my bold prediction of Iga Świątek to go on and win it. But, you know, it would be great if Petra can go on and claim it. And we were talking about this a bit off air, but obviously, Mark, it would be one thing for her to come back from the physical side of what she endured. But how about the mental side of things? I mean, I can only imagine how traumatic that must be to not only have someone enter your house in the manner that happened, but then for her to sustain those injuries. I mean, how much mental fortitude does that take to get back from?
Yeah, I mean, that was a really scary incident where someone broke into her house, and that would have been scary enough as it is. But to be able to come back, and we almost liken it a little bit to the Monica Seles incident many years before that. And we spoke about that off air, but we spoke about Monica, you know, having the stabbing and then coming back and winning a Grand Slam, which is fantastic. But it's the mental scarring of what happens, and just the fear, the day-to-day fear, let alone the tennis fear. And I think, you know, Petra's done a great job. And yesterday she broke down after the match. She was so emotional straight after the match. She was emotional in her press conference. There's definitely mental scars that are going to be there, and they don't go away in a hurry. And, you know, anyone can probably think about a situation that has been diabolical in their life that has really made an impact on them. And you never forget it. You know, there's always a moment that makes you remember about those things. And she obviously went through it yesterday, and a great win. But yeah, just to get over the line is just fantastic for her. And as you said, I think she has to be one of the favorites. She's been there at the business end of the tournament for a Grand Slam before. She knows what it takes. You know, I think she's probably one of the favorites. I think you're right. Your Polish friend will definitely push the boundaries and go okay. But yeah, I mean, what a great result it is for Kvitova. And you know, no matter when, if she ever does win a Grand Slam, it'll be just so much more special because of what she's been through. No matter when it is, you know, even if it's 5 years down the track, it's still getting over a home invasion with a stabbing in her left hand that nearly severed an artery that probably would have ended her career. And that is, it was apparently within about a few millimeters of ending her career. And you know, phenomenal for her to come back from that. And, you know, I'm just so pleased to see it. And I hope everybody else is as well.
I still think she can win Wimbledon as well in a later year. I mean, like, obviously she's won it twice already, but she's just so suited to grass. It's just, I reckon she's going to do it for sure.
Yeah, well, she has won Wimbledon twice, 2011 and 2014. But Mark, what strikes me the most is this is the fittest that she's ever looked. And I think that's the inspirational thing. I think, and we've seen with Victoria Azarenka coming off such a mentally taxing time for herself, she looks in a really fit state at the moment, US Open final as well. And then you've got Petra Kvitova as well, sort of the two of the stars of the game that were dominating in the early parts of last decade. They're both coming back really hard now. And watching Petra Kvitova play, she has this steely look in her eyes that she just wants this. And she has it at most slams. And sometimes it takes a stellar performance to stop her. And sometimes she can just hit a lot of errors. Like last night, she hit 23 winners and 29 unforced errors, which is a fair bit. But you can see the intent there and what she wanted to do, as we did with Sofia Kenin. But I think what I'm really enjoying is she's playing her game. And you have to beat her. And I think that as a coach, is that something that you want to see your player have the confidence in their own game to just do what they need to do to win and then take their opponent's strengths away in the meantime?
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on the physical side of the game. I mean, most of these players should be fit. I mean, if you've had 6 months of preparation physically, there is zero excuse for you to be unfit. The only thing that you would be probably lacking is that match time, and the time on court is a really big one. But from a physical perspective, you know, they should have been at a level where they're just that fit and strong. And it was almost like another preseason for them. So they would have had a preseason in November, December, play through January, February, March, and then basically have, you know, an extended period off where it's basically, you know, you're off the court through the COVID situation, and then you're doing another preseason physically. And I had a great chat with Jordan Thompson when he was going through the COVID break, and he was saying to our players, our kids, to be able to talk to them, that he's just working so hard physically. He couldn't get on the court as much, but he was working so hard physically. So, you know, I see Kvitova and Azarenka, they're fit as, and they're strong, fit. They know their bodies. They're a bit more mature, and they're able to take that next level physically, which then obviously gives you more confidence and be able to then play to your strengths a little bit more. So I think it all works hand in hand. There's a bit of a domino effect with that situation. If you're fit, strong, healthy, then you're mentally fit, you're mentally strong, you're mentally healthy, then your game becomes fit, strong and healthy. So it basically all works hand in hand. And she's obviously, you know, leading the way with that. And hopefully, I mean, I really hope she does get through and win this title, because I think she's good enough. I think she's been around long enough. I think she's been thereabouts long enough. And, you know, what she's been through, I'd love to see it happen.
Yeah, I think Joel and I can both second and third that as well. So good luck to Petra Kvitova for the rest of the tournament. We'll move on to the men's side. And look, Novak Djokovic, it was another fourth round and he hit another linesman. But this time it was flush on the face. But this time it was in the middle of a point, so it was okay. Didn't get defaulted this time. And he progressed through to the quarterfinals, 6-4, 6-3, 6-3, over Karen Khachanov, his biggest test. But guess what, guys? Guess who he plays in the quarterfinals? Pablo Carreño Busta, the one who toppled him. Well, didn't topple him. Laura Clark might have. But, it's the rematch. It's the rematch that we want. And it's a little bit further into the tournament than what we saw at the US Open, but I'm quite excited to see what is going to unfold here, because there could be something mentally, and I'm not sure, Mark, and Djokovic is obviously someone that's probably going to be able to block this sort of stuff out, but Novak might have some like mental scar, maybe some mental flashbacks where he thinks back to that moment in New York when he hit the linesman and says, okay, I can't get too ahead of myself. And maybe he'll be thinking about things a little bit more.
Yeah, I probably think it might go the other way. I think he might be out there going, you know what, you shouldn't have beaten me in that match. I'm just going to show you what it really takes. I think he might have a little bit of extra motivation. I think the whole tournament, he's had a little bit of that. You're right, there could be a flip side to it where he's sort of faced at the other end of the court and seeing some sort of things flashing back. But I think the way Djokovic works, he's sort of one of those guys that says, well, if you think I can't do it, I'll show you I can. And I think he's sort of going to be riding on that little bit of emotion, I think, from the US Open. I think he feels like he probably should have won that. He probably thinks he should win everything. But, you know, he's probably in that situation where he's thinking, hey, you know, that was mine and I want this one. And, you know, he seems to be very driven in this tournament. Just watching him play, he's just a man on a mission. And his stats are, I know I sent them to you overnight, but his stats with Rafael Nadal are absolutely identical to this point in the tournament. Incredible to see how like for like they're going and how they're tracking both to this point in time.
Yeah, you're right. And you did send those stats through. I think, where is it here? I'll find it for you. Here we go. So ATP Media Info provides a lot of these stats on Twitter. And sets won, Djokovic and Rafa 12-6. Love sets won, 2 each. Sets lost, 0 each. Games won, 72 each. games lost, Djokovic 25, Nadal 23. Most games lost in a set, both of them on 4. Most games lost in a match, both of them on 10. Time on court, Djokovic 7 hours 32, Nadal 7 hours 15. That is scary to see what those two have been able to do. And they're trying to say, well, you know, team won the US Open, you're saying maybe the end of the big three. Well, we're going to try and make it an all big three final with the two of us. And Dominic Thiem still in, but Pablo Carreño Busta over Daniel Altmaier in straight sets, 6-2, 7-5, 6-2. Joel, Andre Rublev last night against Martin Fucsovics, he was pushed to the absolute limit. Fucsovics won the first set 7-6. And was up a break in the second and the third. Actually served for a 2-sets-to-love lead, but Rublev was able to win it in 4, won the next 3 sets, 7-5, 6-4, 7-6 in 3 hours and 54 minutes. This guy is in supreme form, but you made a good comment about Martin Fucsovics last night. How he's ranked in the 60s, you'll never know.
Yeah, well, he's, I think a very good player anyway, but I guess it comes back, and you made this comment actually, Val, so to return the compliment, a good comment by you. And it comes back to what Mark said, I think, the other day, which is what pretty much what you said, that, you know, we talk of the the gaps between best and worst, that probably applies to Martin Fuchsovics sometimes. But I guess when I sort of look at the players that he's kind of grouped with in that kind of range, I do think, how is he there? Because he's, I think anyway, clearly better than some of those guys around that part of the tour. But yeah, got to give credit to Andrei Rublev, because he found himself behind a few times in this match, break points down, but he found a way to get back into it. And that's really impressive considering the amount of tennis that he has played. Also, when we factor in Hamburg as well, and we've spoken about the fact that obviously him and Stefanos Tsitsipas, who meet again in the quarterfinals, funnily enough, played the Hamburg final on the first day of Roland Garros. So it's a promising sign for Andre that, despite the fact that he's probably played more tennis than a lot of other players on the men's side, that he was able to find his way back from that situation. Certainly things for him to tidy up there, but he'll be very pleased that he was able to find his way back in.
I think fitness-wise, I think it shows that he's still thereabouts and he's ready to go. I think he's had the fourth most match wins on tour this year, won three titles, and he's looking in really ominous form, and I think it's going to be a tough match. I think he leads the head-to-head with Tsitsipas 3-2, has won their only match, or he's won their matches on clay, and he looks the goods. But Tsitsipas last night, this match against Grigor Dimitrov, he showed the utmost of quality. He was quite incredible. 6-3, 7-6, 6-2. That second set, he squandered a couple of set points, and you and I both said, Joel, that neither of them seemed like they wanted to win that tiebreak at the end right there. But look, he was supreme. Dimitrov took it to him in that second set and was really hitting that backhand crisply. But Tsitsipas was able to move him around the court, mix his game up, drop shots galore. And the way that he's playing, it seems as though he's just kind of ticking along nicely from what happened at the US Open and before that, you know, losing to Chorich. Then he's done okay in Rome, then Hamburg final. And now it's like he's actually got himself into a groove and he's actually peaking at the right time. This is the best tennis I've seen from him all season. And that includes January, that includes the Australian Open. And watching him play last night, he's in ominous form. And I wouldn't be surprised if he took Rublev down and maybe even took it to Djokovic with the way that he's hitting the ball, Joel.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that it's coming on clay, because it probably, I mean, realistically, shouldn't be the surface that's most suited to his game. But it was interesting. He was talking in his media conference after the match, and one of the things he was speaking about was his first round match against Juan Muna. Of course, found himself two sets down, but managed to find a way back in. And again, this links back to something that Mark said very early in our series of daily shows for the French Open, that he was saying this that match really gave him a bit of a kick up the ass, and he's more, I guess, awake to the possibilities and probably more risk averse, I would say, since then. So it's good that he's taken that on board, but I guess that probably leads us into Grigor Dimitrov, and I know this is something that you wanted to address, Val, before the show. I still feel like, and we certainly know that he's obviously been around for a little bit, big raps on him, the mini Fed tag, obviously, hasn't broken through for that Grand Slam and has been around for a while. I just feel like with him, his problem still is just moments. And there was that missed backhand to end that tiebreaker. I feel like they're the kind of moments that are really going to hold him back. And I guess the question for you, Mark, is that will he be one of those players to kind of fall in that trap, if you like, of having a lot of talent, a lot of reps, but just never have the ultimate success?
It looks like it's going that way. I mean, he's obviously a great player. I mean, he's top 20-odd in the world. I mean, he's been there for a long period of time. So he's definitely got the ability to be at that level. It's just, As you guys are mentioning, just the clutch moments, he's not really handling those big moments well. And, you know, he almost looks tight. Every time he plays those big moments, he looks tight. And it looks like he's trying to play an aggressive shot, but he's so tight doing it that he actually can't execute. And you see the difference between sort of him and, say, a Federer or a Nadal or a Djokovic. The big moments, they just go. You know, they let it go. They breathe, they release, they hit really big. Whereas Dimitrov sort of holds up on the shot and you can just see him go, I hope this goes in, rather than I'm going it. And if it goes in, it goes in. So there's a really different mindset that he has. I mean, he's an incredible player. I don't want to take anything away from the way he can play because he's an incredible athlete, beautiful to watch, fluent, you know, controlled, but probably just doesn't have that next level in him. Well, at this stage, I don't know if he'll get it, but, you know, those big moments definitely elude him, as you mentioned, Joel, and I think that it may be slipping away slowly, that opportunity to win a Grand Slam. You know, I don't think while those big three are playing, he can beat any of those three in a best of five set match.
Yep, and I concur with those sentiments. And we saw at the end of 2017, you know, winning the World Tour Finals. He was a Masters 1000 champion in Cincinnati that year. World number three has been to the semis of three of the four slams, quarters of the French. So he's got the game to do it. We know that. We definitely know that. But it's so disappointing to see that he hasn't been able to crack through. And he could have made a Grand Slam final at the 2017 Australian Open. I think it was, 7-5 in the fifth, lost to Nadal. Had his chances, and even to get through to a Grand Slam final at the US last year after beating Federer in five sets after Roger had a bad back, he had a chance to play Daniil Medvedev and take him down, but Medvedev was the one that took the mantle, and I think that was the usurping moment where Grigor was no longer that next generation to take the mantle. I think he was part of that, okay, he's going to be really lucky to win a slam now, and I think I'm still in that mold, and I don't think he's going to get there because there's players that have gone past him, and he's had his chance, and I think he's done. So, look, he's definitely got the talent to do it. We discussed this in the US Open show, Mark, but I don't think he's going to be one to actually go on and do it, kind of like Carolina Pliskova. But, look, we'll see in a later date. And I don't know if there's anything else you guys want to add to that. But, yeah, that's, I guess, my two cents on the Grigor matter.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, mate. And it'd be interesting. I think, you know, you're right. Tsitsipas did play extremely well, though. And sometimes... The thing about this sport as well is you may play a good match, but your opponent just may play better on the day. And, you know, obviously Tsitsipas is in form and Rublev as well. And I think it's going to be a cracking encounter. Obviously, they did play last week and Rublev took the chocolates, but it wasn't without, you know, Tsitsipas being right there and ready to take the match as well. So it's going to be an incredible match. I think the winner will definitely challenge Novak. Probably more than what he has had if Novak does get through, that is. Obviously, I'm not discounting Carreño Busta, but I think Novak should get through that. And then, yeah, whoever plays him, I think we'll give him a bit more of a challenge than what he's already had. And I think he needs that challenge, Novak, at this point in the tournament because he's pretty much waltzed through it pretty comfortably.
Yep, I think so as well. And look, it is going to be a big night of tennis tonight as well. We have a bumper schedule, all five matches on Court Philippe Chatrier with Ange Jabeur and Danielle Collins kicking things off to replicate or to make up for what didn't happen last night. So they'll play their fourth round encounter. Then we move into the quarterfinals, Elena Svitolina against Nadia Podoroska. If Svitolina can get through, maybe she might just be a chance to finally crack through for that elusive Grand Slam. Who knows? Diego Schwartzman against Dominic Thiem. That has the capability of going 5 hours. The ATP put up some highlights and points between the two of them. And boy, we are in for a big match. Iga Świątek against Martina Trevisan, Joel's favourite player now. Iga, and we'll see if she can get through to her maiden Grand Slam semi-final. Could be Martina Trevisan as well. And Yannick Sinner against Rafa Nadal, the young Italian against the Spanish bull. And will Nadal make it through to yet another Roland Garros semi-final? We will find out. This has been the Tennis Menu's daily US Open show. Remember, you can head to thetennismenu.com and get an annual subscription for $99.90 US and 600 tennis-specific drills, which can make you a better tennis coach. Mark Sifoulis, thank you very much for your efforts today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Looking forward to Ange Jabeur and Danielle Collins, as we did mention yesterday and didn't go ahead. But good luck to Shane Leonazzo, a very good friend from the Tennis Menu, and he's data-driven sports analytics as well. And wishing him good luck. And obviously Tom Couch, who's Danielle's partner as well. So it'll be a really interesting battle, but looking forward to it.
You're very conflicted, aren't you, Mark? But we'll have more urinal talk tomorrow. Mark Sifoulis, thank you very much. Best high performance coach in the business. Joel Frucci, thank you. And did you practice your Polish goodbye or?
No, I forgot. Sorry, sir. Maybe tomorrow.
Disappointing. I'm going to give you the cane when I see you next. one of those brutal teachers. It's been a great show. Mark Sifoulis, Joel Frucci, Val Ferbo, a bit loose at times, but remember, we've got a big show lined up tomorrow. First day of quarterfinals action, we'll review, and then the end of the tournament is getting ever closer. Stay tuned.